through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say there's a lot at stake this weekend for the divisional round teams. Not everyone, right? Some of the teams, it's like, yeah, I'm just happy to be here. What can I say? Happy to be here. For other ones, there's a lot on the line. Now, on Saturday, you've got Bengals, Titans, 49ers, Packers. By the way, Jake, yesterday we kept saying we need to figure out a bet for Lefko, producer of Wyman and Bob, huge Titans fan, and Justin,
yes,
producer of the Mike Salk Show, huge Bengals fan. I finally figured it out. Now, we can't let Bob know. No one listening let Wyman know about this.
Yeah, it's Wyman who's got the big say in all this.
So no one let Wyman know. He doesn't have a Twitter, so you can't notify him anyway.
Okay.
The bet that I'm thinking, Jake, is you know how Wyman and Lefko love the Jelly Bellies that they have? They always talk about them.
Man.
They go in, they taste
obsessed
test them, they
them.
Rank them. They talk about them so much that I'm pretty sure Jelly Belly sent them a giant jar of jelly beans.
They in fact did.
Like they're obsessed with them. They hide them in the sports pit, which is like our big office. If you open up one of the big drawers, there's a giant box that says Jelly Belly and it says Wyman and Lefko only. So they're very protective of them. I think if the Titans lose, Lefko has to give Justin in the Mike Salk Show the Jelly Bellies. Which I love because Wyman's going to be so mad and it's going to be like the teenage son stole the car at midnight, drove it and crashed it, got into a fender bender.
That's
and Wyman's
true,
gonna
but
be
Stacey,
furious.
Stacey, you have a tendency to only think this through one way.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What does
about.
Justin have to give
so, okay,
to
so
Lefko?
That's a good question. That's what I was thinking. So I was like, well, it could be that they have to switch roles where Lefko gets to sleep in.
Justin, that's the opposite of what Lefko would have to do.
Justin gets to sleep in. Lefko has to wake up early. So, yeah, what would Justin have to give Lefko?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's nothing really that if you guys are regular listeners, is there something the Mike Salk Show they absolutely love? Maybe like, you know, Justin has to bring in donuts for them and like no one's allowed to cut it up because Mike also loves cutting donuts. I don't know.
So,
I have to ask.
So, again, Stacey, you haven't thought this through.
I have.
Well,
sometimes ideas come in pieces. No, sometimes ideas come in pieces, Jake. You don't have all of the. Do you think that Picasso or Da Vinci, when they closed their eyes and imagined the beautiful works of art they were going to make, that they saw it complete? Or do you think that it just kind of came to them in waves because they're true artists? That's me. I'm an artist, Jake. This is coming to me in waves.
Okay, sure. And so once you get that figured out, then I would love to hear both sides of the bet because that's only when a bet is complete and that both sides have agreed to said bet, Stacey.
Now, the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776, says losers forced to eat all the Jelly Bellies in one sitting.
Ugh.
In one sitting?
We're talking about a really big jug of Jelly Bellies.
I don't mind that. Because at first they're going to be like, great, no problem.
Ugh, they're going to get
sick.
That's like
they have
probably
to, they have
4 or 5
it.
Pounds of Jelly Bellies, okay? That's like
they have to
thousands of them.
By the end of the show. How about that? That's more realistic.
If anyone can think of a good one to what would a Titans fan that lost to the Bengals have to do, let us know, 206-421-3776, because I'm trying to think of the other half of this. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Maybe like maybe Lefko has to give Wyman really gross jelly beans and then face the wrath of Wyman. I don't know. Somehow I'll get him involved. Anyway, so that's the bet that I'm thinking. Let me get to the actual divisional round games. You got Bengals-Titans on Saturday. Huge outcome here at 7:10, but maybe not the most at stake in the league for our conversation. You've got 49ers at Packers on Sunday, Rams at Bucks, Bills at Chiefs, the one that I think most people will be most excited to see. Jake, I think the Packers are under a lot of pressure. I think the Rams are under a lot of pressure. I think the Bills are under a lot of pressure. But I also think in a weird way, there are outcomes that can affect the Seahawks. I don't mean like their off-season moves, right? I don't mean like because one team wins and one team loses, the Seahawks have a direct answer with their own, you know, moves and transactions. What I mean is that the winning or losing a Super Bowl by a couple of different teams here kind of changes our ideas about how to build a Super Bowl team. Because not every team in the postseason right now in the divisional round is built equally or built with the same formula. I don't think the 49ers are going to win a Super Bowl. Sorry, any 49ers fans that are listening. I don't think they're going to win a Super Bowl with Jimmy G. But, Jake, what if they do? Then I can guarantee you, you're going to see people saying, you don't need a franchise quarterback. You don't need that. You don't need to get the Aaron Rodgers guy. You don't need to get Tom Brady. You just need to get a serviceable guy. Yeah.
I mean, you could maybe say that the same thing if Tennessee wins as well. They're kind of built in the same way, not overly reliant on Ryan Tannehill with their running game and the way their defensive line is playing. But ultimately, you have to have a great roster built around those guys, right? And are the Seattle Seahawks in that position as of right now? I mean, that's the thing. Like, if they were in a position where they had a tremendous roster and you felt like you could move on from your quarterback and therefore it gives you the opportunity to build a more successful roster and you get a Derek Carr or a Jimmy G type, then sure, maybe you could go down that road. But I don't think the Seahawks are there from a roster construction perspective. And so that might get some people to say that's how you could win. But I don't think people recognize the domino effect of making that happen and where this Seahawks team really truly is in order to get it done. So I absolutely agree that it can shape narratives. It can shape the way that we view this. I mean, on the other end as well, you look at Aaron Rodgers, right, and the Green Bay Packers. That's another quarterback or the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. Those are teams that have quarterbacks that are taking a significant percentage of your cap and would win as well. And now, you know, you don't really have as many people that say, well, you can't win with a quarterback that has an X amount percent against the cap, right? So I am going to be curious to see how this unfolds and see what the storylines come of this. Because, Stacey, as you watch these teams, it's important. It's important to watch at this time of the year to see what types of teams are winning, what types of teams are progressing forward, what types of rosters do these teams have, and how do you try to replicate that in your own way if you're someone here in Seattle watching it from afar.
Yeah, it's so a couple numbers on that. Aaron Rodgers, 14.5% of Green Bay's cap this year. That jumps to 22% next year. And we all know that we've heard that number of, like, the closer you get to, what is it, about 17. That's where you can you haven't seen a quarterback making more than that win a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson, 17% of the cap this year, drops to 16% in 2022 because the cap itself gets a nice little boost. And let's get back to, though, some of the formula that you mentioned. We'll start with Jimmy G and the 49ers. I see the idea of, you know, hey, you don't need a franchise guy to win a Super Bowl. We've seen teams that are elite defensively or have a ton of other weapons have, like, a serviceable guy. Like, it's the kind of quarterback that will lose you a game more often than any other player does. But, like, he also is fine enough, given all the talent you have around him. But I agree with you. Like, Well, what talent would you have around that quarterback here in Seattle? Because you haven't, like the 49ers, been stacking up top picks, right? Yeah, like, if you bring in a Jimmy G-type quarterback to Seattle, fine. You saw the 49ers, you know, get pretty deep into the playoffs. But do you have Nick Bosa? Like, do you have that defensive line?
Well,
do you have Debo Samuel?
Pretty clearly, the answer is no.
Right.
Right.
How about kind of the opposite one? So there's the 49ers is that one of, like, you don't really need a franchise guy. The Titans are an interesting one because Ryan Tannehill's better than Jimmy G, but I don't know that I don't put Ryan Tannehill with, like, the Aaron Rodgers type level. So I don't know where to put him other than just an offense and a team that is built around a run first mentality. There's a team that is under a lot of pressure that I think a lot of people would like to see the Seahawks emulate that kind of aggressiveness towards their Super Bowl window. But because it hasn't paid off for them, the argument is always there that it won't work, and that is the LA Rams. The LA Rams have used their first-round picks for trades in a way that I've never seen another team do. Not only that, they've gone after guys in free agency. They've made big signings. We most recently saw the Odell Beckham Jr. Signing happening. The one thing that
Von Miller this year.
The one thing people always point to is, like, well, look, Sean McVay, he's this young offensive guru. Everyone talks about how great he is, but never won a Super Bowl. So you can talk that talk and be as impressive as you want, but you know, until you get that monkey off your shoulder, you're just going to be the guy that's like, you know, a trend rather than someone that has staying power. Like, you can mm-hmm. disprove that with a win.
Right. Yeah, you absolutely can. And also, it takes away, unfortunately, and you're, if everyone here in Seattle's listening, right, you're going, oh, man, I hope that doesn't happen. But you can't definitively say, well, Pete Carroll is without a doubt the best coach, right, based off of recent success and also based off of Sean McVay having that Super Bowl, you know, to his name. Even being able to get to a Super Bowl, even if he loses, Stacey, being able to get to the Super Bowl twice in recent history, I mean, that matters, right? I mean, that absolutely matters, and that is another, you know, a statement piece to your resume. So I do believe that there's a lot of narratives that can change the discussion around here in Seattle, and that's what makes this, you know, fun to watch. I mean, it's fun to watch these individual teams, fun to watch the individual storylines that you're witnessing here, but also, you know, very much how it ties back here into Seattle and what are you missing? What do you need moving forward? And, you know, the other side of it too, you know, Stacey, that we're looking at with some of these teams is these teams are very, a lot of these teams are very quarterback driven heavy. Look at the Packers. Look at the, I would say even the Rams with Matthew Stafford, Tom Brady with the Bucks, Josh Allen with the Bills, Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs. And then you could point to Joe Burrow with the Bengals. I mean, the majority of these teams are very quarterback heavy led, and it's about whether or not they can get their quarterbacks to perform at their best. And you're not going to watch these teams and say, especially like the Bills and the Chiefs, for example, and say, you need to therefore adopt that type of offense for Russell Wilson. They're not necessarily the same style of quarterback, but the question will remain, how do you get your best player, your quarterback, to perform at their best and get them, you know, make them as successful as some of these guys, some of the years that these guys are having, and looking at the ways that they're getting it done, looking at the ways that they've been able to put things around to support their quarterbacks. I think all of those things are going to be incredibly important and interesting to watch and survey and to try to understand. And as we move forward, and don't forget, you know, last year there was a really not happy Russell Wilson sitting there at the Super Bowl watching Tom Brady, watching the Bucks offense and going, man, would love to have some of that here in Seattle. And so I do think, you know, some of these conversations definitely get set up by the games that we are witnessing here over the next final weeks.
This is already a rough start to a Friday. It's already an awful start to a Friday, Jake. I came in feeling confident. I came in feeling great. Came in thinking, you know what? I'm actually really excited about these games. I think these are going to be really good games, unlike the wild card round, which like all but two were kind of blowouts. Here I am ready to talk about them. We're taking your guys' calls at 1. Really excited to talk to you guys. We've got the professor joining us in 15 minutes. The Kraken won last night, undefeated since bringing in a team dog. Really excited about that. And walked myself into something, Jake. Walked myself right into something. Because Curtis and I make fun of you regularly for what we call Jake-isms. Curtis, what's an example of a Jake-ism?
Well, just the other day, you can't put the tube in the back in the bottle.
Can't put the tube back in the bottle. He's a jack of all aces.
You can lean your hat on that.
It's like pulling magic out of a hat. Mm-hmm. Lots of really good ones. I am getting absolutely destroyed.
Oh no!
By the Mac and Jack's text line saying, "Stacey, you talk a big game about Jake's
yep.
Jake-isms,
uh-oh.
And you just said, get that monkey off your shoulder.
No.
Yes.
I know.
Oh, no.
Yes.
They're like, coming for everybody.
Chip on your shoulder, monkey on your back. I combine them.
Oh,
I had a Jake-ism.
I was so happy.
I am mortified. My day is ruined.
I am so happy the text line recognized this. I was, as a good teammate, I just was going to let you go. I mean, I understood what you were saying.
Why?
Let
absolutely
it flow,
not.
Let it ride.
This will never, that favor will never be repaid, Jake. I want you to know that. Don't expect me to repay that favor. If you ever do anything again,
I'm
making
so
fun of
happy.
Second,
yes.
I'm so
now
upset.
You know what it's like to be me.
I don't.
How's it feel?
It feels awful.
Oh,
I wish I could go back in time and do it all over again.
I'm the only one
Sean
that has
trying to get to the
I'm the only one that hasn't had a Jake-ism.
Curtis
yet.
Rogers.
What?
You said very confidently
that's
that
not
the
a
Puget
Jake.
Sound
that is not a Jake-ism.
Freshwater.
What a Jake-ism is, at its core, is a common idiom that is off by a word or two.
Yeah.
That was just me spitting facts.
Like you can
okay?
lead a, you can lead a.
That is
teach
not
a
Jakeism. A Jakeism is what you have said, and it's what Jake has said for years on these airs.
Okay,
airwaves.
First of all, what I have said, I did it one time. I did it one time, just that one time. And honestly, here's my argument.
Stacey, your shoulder, it's a gateway drug.
Listen, your shoulder's basically your back. If you have a monkey on your shoulder, the monkey is arguably
no,
on
Stacey,
your back.
No,
monkeys are huge
no,
animals.
No, no, no.
It's not a little tiny
hey,
bird.
Hey, Stacey. Stacey, what you need to understand is you need to recognize that you made a mistake. It's okay. Everyone does it. And you just need to take the L.
I don't even remember saying
just
that.
Just walk
I don't
away
even think I said that.
With some dignity
no.
and take the L and move on. It's okay.
Curtis,
it happens
roll
to
the
me
tape.
All the time.
I think I said Sean McVay has a chance to get the monkey off his back.
Nah.
I did not say monkey on the shoulder. That I think that people misheard and are misremembering and living in an alternate reality where I
See,
said that.
You're trying to create this narrative that doesn't exist, Stacey. You said it.
Incorrect.
You can gaslight us all you want.
At
we heard what we heard.
45, I want to actually rank, so you guys think about your answers, rank the teams that are under the most pressure to least pressure this weekend. Bengals, Titans, 49ers, Packers, Rams, Bucks, Bills, Chiefs. Most pressure to least pressured. I'm not necessarily surprised by my pick for most and least, but everything in between I think is going to surprise you a little bit. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
253 says Stacey is as wrong in this as she was with the donuts.
I'm not
headline
wrong with the donuts.
Number
I'm
one.
Not wrong with the
headline
donuts.
Number There's... one, and your mic is off. The MLBPA
yes!
will submit a counter proposal to the owners on Monday.
Oh,
what's the real
God.
Headline?
Source inside the bargaining room says the counter proposal is actually just written on a piece of torn out notebook paper. Did you guys hear that?
Oh
I thought
gosh.
It sounded like I cut out for a minute. Interesting.
You can fill in the blank yourself.
Okay.
I can't believe
okay.
you turned my mic on.
I don't know what to make of this situation, to be honest with you. I mean, the MLBPA and the MLB have
a tumultuous, toxic relationship.
Yes, they do. It is. It
They're
is
Tommy
so
Lee
bad.
And Pamela Anderson. Just it's such
it's
a mess to watch from
like,
afar.
They can't. Can they get anything done?
No.
I mean, can they have just one normal conversation? One normal conversation where there is actually some decent back and forth, and you get something productive done. Like right now, it's like, what do we pay you for? If I'm the players. What do I pay you for? I'm trying to get you to, yes, help us win some fights here in this next CBA. But at the same time, I want to get my money.
Well,
I want to play. I want to, you know, progress and move forward. And I don't want to sit here in a lockout and not get any money because you guys can't figure out how to negotiate the right way.
Yeah, technically, what the MLBPA proposals would include would benefit the majority of players, because the top paid players in MLB will always get paid, right? There's always going to be a team willing to pay those guys, willing to just pay them a ton of money. It's like the middle tier guys that want to be
right.
able to increase that wage, but also like have a different system, arbitration system, hit free agency earlier. Like that's going to benefit those guys, de-incentivize tanking to expand payrolls for different teams. So maybe that's why there's less pushback that we're hearing about, but I don't know. By the way, Mac and Jack's text line from the 570. Okay. Now you guys are feeding a fed horse with these Jake-isms.
A fed horse?
You're feeding a fed
don't
horse.
Don't you dare. Don't feed that fed horse. I understand and I get the premise and I understand what they're going after, but like...
It's frustrating.
They are... You know, it is frustrating, and, you know, John Morosi was on with Wyman and Bob yesterday and just talking through when will these bad negotiating tactics really start to hurt spring training, really start to affect regular season play, and we're getting right up close to that. So I'm hoping that you hear some more productive talks coming here very, very soon. Because once again, this isn't just about getting what you want from a player perspective, but it's also making sure you don't alienate yourself even more from a fan base and making this game shrink even more and more to the public eye.
From the 469. Headline, we rise. Shout out, Texas. Y'all have lost control here.
I mean, one of us certainly has.
Yeah.
Headline number two.
Jake.
The Texans have completed an interview with former quarterback Josh McCown for their head coaching vacancy. What's the real headline?
Texans reportedly want to try something different for their next head coach, different from the rest of the league, which is why they're interviewing a young, offensive-minded white guy. You haven't seen
Never
that.
Been done before.
Never been done before. Never. Now,
truly innovative.
Was that a little bit of a trend? Did teams see Sean McVay's success and think, find us bargain Sean McVay, find us generic Sean McVay, find us the DIY Sean McVay, and then found Cliff Kingsbury? Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Look how that worked out. I say that, but Zach Taylor's doing pretty well in Cincy.
He is doing also great in Cincy. Yeah. And you know what? I this one, to me, really drives me crazy because it's not thinking outside the box. It's not, you know, something that's innovative or, you know, looking at a coaching tree that is filled with talent. I have a buddy and I really like him and he's a smart guy and he's been a backup quarterback for a long time. Therefore, I want to make him my next head coach. Like, I'm sorry, what? I don't understand. There's so many good candidates out there. Why on earth would you go with Josh McCown? He hasn't even called plays
well,
in this league.
John McClain of the Houston Chronicle says that Jack Easterby and Josh McCown are tight. They're like really
I don't
good
care.
Buddies.
I don't care. I do not care. Can someone take that team away from them? Can they just take it away from ownership and just give it to somebody else? I mean, my goodness, it is awful.
It is really
weird. It's so bad.
Well, it's really weird too. I there's a world where Josh McCown ends up being like a phenomenal offensive coordinator somewhere, or ends up being, you know,
sure,
like the next hot thing in the NFL. But there's also a world where he doesn't, and that feels more likely given his complete lack of coaching experience at any pro level. And if I'm another coach in the NFL who's been working my way up the ladder from, quality control assistant to offensive, assistant to quarterback coach.
Can I give you a name?
Yeah.
Can I give you a name?
Yeah.
How about Byron Leftwich? Exactly.
Right. I'd be like,
exactly,
are you kidding
the person
me right
you're
now?
Describing.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Kraken. They've won two in a row for the first time since November 29th after beating the Sharks 3-2 on Thursday. What's the real headline?
Now, this is the most important headline of the day. The Kraken are undefeated since getting a team dog.
Facts.
I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that that's something that we need to be watching and monitoring.
Well, Stacey, another thing we need to be monitoring is you have not resurrected your quest for the cup phrase that you were trying to make a thing.
Yeah,
at
quest
the
for the
of
cup
the season.
With a K.
Whatever
quest
happened to all your...
Cup.
No, you was a C.
Oh, that quest was, for the cup with a C.
Yeah.
With a C.
It's been so
you
long.
You can't even remember your own... Oh, my gosh.
It's quest with a C because cup is spelled
Jeez,
with a C.
You are,
but it should be with a K because
yeah.
of the Kraken.
No, I sold out of merchandise. And I haven't
you
been able to get
You sold out of merchandise.
Yeah. I had a quest for the cup, hashtag quest for the cup with a C.
I would like to buy a shirt.
I can't.
What happened?
Just the supply chain.
Oh, really? There's such a demand
some supply chain issues.
So all of your gear is just sitting
completely
off of Long Beach somewhere in California?
Sold. It was completely sold. I mean, people
loved
it.
It was on ship that was stuck in the Suez Canal.
The Evergreen. You guys were making fun of me, and you thought Quest for the Cup with a C was such a stupid name, given that the Kraken starts with a K, and I could have done Quest for the Cup with a K. But other people loved it. Lots of
one other person.
This guy, Jerry.
Jerry.
Yeah, he bought it. Kurt. He bought six T-shirts.
Wow.
Sure. Curtis. have we gotten the notice of restraining order against Stacey Ross yet? Has that shown up to the office?
It needs to be notarized first.
Jones.
Yeah, we'll take it to a UPS store and get it notarized.
Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show. If you miss it, subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, guys. please, please, please don't forget to rate and leave a review if you do subscribe. We really, really appreciate it. Did you guys see that someone left a review on Salk's podcast that said, you're like the dad I never had, or you're like my unofficial dad or something?
Boy. Unofficial dad?
I got to find it. They said something about Salk being like a father. And it killed me. I laughed so hard.
If someone left that for me, I would feel so old. But
all right. You know what? Let's figure out what's not just what's going on for the Seahawks this offseason, but there are still games left to play for some teams in the divisional round. So we'll ask the professor, John Clayton, about those odds next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right. Obviously, we're going to look ahead to the divisional round of the playoffs. A couple good games on the slate here for Saturday and Sunday. Before we get to it, though, plenty to talk about with the Seahawks. John Clayton, the professor, joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, John, how's it going?
Hanging in there.
Oh, good, good. I'm going to start with here in Seattle. Obviously, I want to look ahead to the divisional round, and you know so much about it, and I want to get a preview, but I have to start with the biggest story here, the search for the defensive coordinator. Any front runners to you?
To me, I think Ed Donatell, because for several reasons. You know, one, he's worked with Pete for the longest time. You know, he was there together. They were together at the University of Pacific in 1983. He was on the staff with the Jets with Pete when he was head coach. He's been a coordinator four different times. He's coming off a great season with the Denver Broncos. He's got four different coordinator jobs in the league. So I think right now he's the leading candidate.
Now, John, you know, one of the things that I was, you know, we did a lot of interviews about different candidates, and we were talking with a reporter from Dallas about Joe Witt, and she mentioned something that really, you know, sparked something about all of these names that we've been hearing about in the defense coordinator conversation. She was talking about how Joe Witt was such a great support to Dan Quinn and really pushed him in a lot of different ways, and how Dan Quinn really valued that relationship. With all of these names being connected, John, to a very similar coaching tree, mm-hmm. Clint Hurt, Ed Donatell, Sean Desai, is there a way, do you think that there's a way that they could all coexist together, that they could somehow find themselves on this staff?
I don't know about all of them, but again, it's like, for example, I mean, you can see with Sean Desai and Clint Hurt and with Ed Donatell, they all work together in Chicago, so there's definitely a fit there. And then in the case of Witt, I mean, he would come in a little bit separate, but the question is going to be, if Desai comes in as not going to be coordinator, is he going to be the passing game coordinator, or what's he going to do? Because if Donatell gets the job, who is a former defensive back coach, then, you know, that very well could be that Witt might not fit in. So I can't see all four of them fitting in, but I can definitely see three of them fitting in.
A good question from the Mac and Jack's text line. I'll just apply it to all the coordinators. Does it matter whether they come from a 3-4 or 4-3?
Yes.
So which would we know that Seattle plays with a 4-3. Are they always going to prioritize those guys, or does other stuff matter more?
Well, I think they prioritize a 4-3 because, again, you know, it goes into the Pete Carroll system. And, you know, Donatell obviously has been in a 4-3, you know, a good portion of his career. And so it's like, you know, I can definitely see that being the case. You know, in the case of a 3-4, you know, they don't need that. You know, because, again, I mean, you saw last year with, you know, Ken Norton Jr. and that. I mean, they did a few, you know, 3-4 principles, and I didn't think it worked. I mean, when you have, you know, guys, you know, like defensive linemen dropping into coverage, that's not what this defense is supposed to be like. And you had guys dropping into coverage from the defensive line. And, you know, that shouldn't happen. And so it's like, no, I think that, you know, it needs to be based in a 4-3 defense.
Now, John, moving forward, also one of the biggest things that they have to figure out is how to, you know, upgrade their personnel. No matter how they, no matter who's coming in to coordinate this thing, they got to get better it from a personnel perspective. You know, when you watch these playoff games and you're going to watch them over the weekend, what are some of the things that stand out to you from a personnel perspective defensively?
Well, I mean, from the personnel standpoint, I mean, obviously they got to look at cornerbacks. you know, they've got to look at, you know, maybe, and again, I think that, you know, people were overdoing it on the defensive line because they've got numbers on the defensive line. They just have to see if there's one, maybe two defensive, because remember, they've got less than $70 million of cap room. So they've got plenty of cap room to be able to get something, and they're not going to overpay a defensive lineman or anything like that. But again, they have the room to be able to do some things. So instead of paying, you know, $20 million for a defensive end or something like that, you know, if they can pay, you know, $8, $9 million, something like that, for somebody who fits, then I think that they definitely might do that. But I don't think they need to overdo it.
Do you see them bringing back both Rashad Penny and Quandre Diggs?
Yes, right. I do. Yeah, because again, I mean, you know, everybody goes crazy on the Rashad Penny thing just because how he finished his season, but it's not like he's going to get a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you go on the running back market, 2 years ago, the highest paid running back in free agency was Melvin Gordon at $8 million. Last year was Drake, you know, Stephon Drake from the Raiders, and he was a backup, and he got $5.5 million. So, like, for example, best case scenario to get, you know, Rashad Penny back is probably $5.2 million at the highest. Mm. You can afford that.
Yeah, you can definitely afford that. The next question comes in, John, because do you go into the season with Rashad Penny and Chris Carson as your two running backs? And from a talent perspective, I'd say, heck yeah, of course.
Yeah.
They're very talented. From an injury perspective, it makes you wonder, you go into the year, you just don't want to be in another situation, John, where you're going into the year with high hopes, high expectations, and then by the end of the year, you're wondering, where's your running back depth?
Well, at some point, too, in the draft, they can take a running back. So, I mean, that's always a possibility, too. It's just they don't have to take one high if they get Penny back. So it's like, I mean, you know, if you constantly worry about injuries, you're constantly going to worry. Mm-hmm. I mean, Penny finished the season strong. I mean, you can see that, you know, he may have put in some of that stuff behind him, and you certainly don't know about Chris Carson. So it's like, you know, there's that hope that you can do it. But if you work in fear, then you're never going to go anywhere.
All right, John, I'm going to go rapid fire here for the matchups this weekend, four games. I'm not going to hold you to these answers,
yeah,
Professor, but we got to know your pick. So I'll start with Saturday, Bengals at Titans.
I'd say right now Titans, you know, they're at home. They're getting Derrick Henry back to a certain degree. You know, they certainly will have a little bit more out of Julio Jones. You know, the big thing, and also, too, you know, not that they're a big pressure team because they don't do well on sacks, but, you know, Ryan Tannehill was sacked 47 times. Joe Burrow was sacked 51 times.
All right. 49ers at Packers.
I mean, easy to say Packers because Packers are at home. It's a night game. They've got Aaron Rodgers. And even though they have Jimmy Garoppolo off the injury list, they probably shouldn't. I mean, he's got the bad thumb. He's got the bad shoulder. I mean, he probably should not play, but he's going to.
All right, and quickly, we'll just do the last two, Rams at Bucks and then Bills at Chiefs.
I'd say right now the Bucks, even though it's going to be a struggle with the injuries, you know, they may get Tristan Wilfs back and all that different stuff. I don't know where they are going to be at running back, but I still think you got Tom Brady and you got Tom Brady at home.
All right, he is the Professor. John Clayton, you can hear him with us every single Friday. John, talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Again, that's a preview of these games, but which of these teams is under the most pressure to win this weekend? We have our list next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, you have four games over Saturday and Sunday. Eight teams here in the divisional round. Bengals, Titans, 49ers, Packers, Rams, Bucks, Bills, Chiefs. Jake, I have a definitive list. In fact, I would say like the correct list, not even objective, just the correct, the only list of the teams ranking from under most pressure to least pressure. Are you ready to hear number one?
I am ready to hear your list, Stacey. Yes.
For obvious reasons. I would say the almost unanimous number one pick for the team under the most pressure this weekend in the playoffs, the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers essentially threatened to leave this offseason. Rodgers and Devontae Adams hinted in an Instagram post that it's the last dance, both of them posting that same photo. You have Aaron Rodgers getting a little older, still talented, MVP season, have no idea whether or not he's going to be in Green Bay next year. And, oh, by the way, if they lose in the NFC Championship, it'll be the third consecutive year that they've lost in the NFC Championship.
Yeah, that to me is clearly number one, and I would 100% agree with you there. And it just feels like this also has the, you know, Aaron Rodgers, it's almost like you can never really truly understand where his mindset is at, and it just ever changes with the wind, right? He's happy, he's not happy. He's satisfied, he's not satisfied. And I believe that ending on a positive note with Green Bay and being able to move and progress forward past a NFC Championship game is going to be very important in terms of the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers feeling like, hey, I don't want to go anywhere. Green Bay's home. I want to stop the drama in the offseason, and I just want to, you know, commit to being a Green Bay Packer moving forward. Devontae Adams can then sign a long-term deal in Green Bay, and all can be well, right? I think that that really is somewhat at stake here, even though there has been a lot of reports that Aaron Rodgers has expressed that he has certainly been happier with what has been going on and how things have been conducted, you know, from a front office perspective all the way down. So, but I do believe that Aaron Rodgers can change and flip on a dime. And so I think that this would mean an awful lot to this team. And this group, I think, is set up for success for a while. But it would be very heartbreaking if they lost in the divisional round or if they lost in the NFC Championship game, as they've been knocking on the door of a Super Bowl, you know, for 3 years in a row now.
The next two teams, I've gone back and forth a million times, and only recently, I'm talking about like an hour before show prep, settled on the order of 2 and 3, though they're pretty interchangeable. So I'm just going to go to number 2. The team with the most pressure on them, number 2 spot, the Bills. They've been trying to establish themselves above the Chiefs in the AFC pecking order for a long time. They've got Josh Allen under contract. So in the same way that the Chiefs have Mahomes, like, you don't really doubt that they're going to be in contention and they're going to be a serious, you know, contender and a threat in the AFC for years to come. However, what do the Patriots and Mac Jones start to look like, right? That division becomes tough. Same thing with the Chiefs and Justin Herbert. But also, like, the Bills have this weird way of being considered a really dominant team while also being seen as still like a little brother in the AFC. It's always, can you beat the Chiefs or not? So they've proven they can beat the Patriots and get out of the AFC East, but can you beat top dog in the AFC? I think that if they do not advance this weekend, it would be considered a huge disappointment.
Yes, you know, when you go through these lists, I'm just, you know, like nodding my head because one, I agree with you wholeheartedly. But the other is that when you talk about the Bills, you talk about the Rams, you talk about these other teams, these are teams that they are so close to taking that next step in their program, but they have to get it done. And gosh, the narrative that will change around the Bills and Josh Allen and this group overall would be significant when it comes to who is the brightest franchise in the AFC, because obviously we know who everybody thinks of when we think of the AFC and where they can progress and what their overall outlook is, and that's the Chiefs.
All right, I'm going to combine the next two to just rattle these off. In third place, could have been second place, the Rams, almost the same reason. They made a bunch of first-round trades, big splash moves. Is it going to be worth it? Otherwise, a Super Bowl win is that monkey on Sean McVay's back, not shoulder. He's trying to get it off of his back.
There you go.
Because he's this young offensive guy that has made this team the talk of the town, and they won the NFC West, and they've been in contention. They've been to a Super Bowl. That last Super Bowl win must have left such an awful taste, or Super Bowl loss must have left such an awful taste in their mouth. 3 points? They've been dying to get back there. Not only that, but they do have a closing window. Not soon, but a closing window on some of the league's biggest stars like Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald.
Yeah, and you also have to think about Von Miller. Are you going to sign him to a long-term deal? Are you going to get OBJ back the following year? So there's some question marks in terms of the additions that you've had, and this is the season that you truly want to be able to capitalize on it. You know, Stacey, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit here. I would absolutely flip, and I know you said it's debatable. I would flip Rams and Bills here. I think the Rams are the other franchise that has the most pressure on them to win for the reasons that you outlined, all the big moves that they've made, going for it now, mortgaging your future in a very dramatic way. And so you're right. They have a ton of pressure on them this weekend.
All right. One, Packers. Two, three, tie, Bills and Rams. Four, Titans. This is the first one where it's almost more of like a fan pressure. I think that the Titans have a lot of pressure from fans who have just been so disappointed with this team and this franchise for so long, and all they want to do is actually win. And they're even more of like an uphill battle in the AFC. You've had the league's best running back who's going to come back this week. You've had a team with a head coach that everyone out there loves, but can you actually get it done? Not only that, they're like a pretty disrespected number one seed. So the Titans are in there at number four. Bucks are number five. Look, I put them in here because they just won a Super Bowl. I don't know how much pressure is on them to win another when they just won it last year. But they've got to be at least in there at around four or five, because how many years do you have with Tom Brady, really?
I would argue that they are number four, Stacey, and it's for the fact that you don't know how much time you have left with Tom Brady. Not that he's not going to be on this earth any longer, but you don't know how much longer
Jake,
he's going to be
getting kind of morbid.
donning that Tampa Bay jersey.
Tom,
you don't know how long he's going to be in Tampa Bay. You don't know if he's going to suddenly retire. He's going up on a contract. Look, and everybody, the whole theme was for Tampa Bay is we're running it back. We're running this whole thing back, and we are doing everything we can to keep everybody together. We're doing everything we can, no matter how hard it is contract-wise. We are going to, you know, be bursting at the seams here to be able to fit it all in. And I think that to me is why the Bucks, I think they have a ton of pressure on them, because after this year, who knows what's going to happen?
I just can't get, I hope that anyone like 40 and older is all they're doing is being stuck on you saying he's in his 40s. We don't know how much longer he has. All right. I've got 6, 7, and 8. I'm going to get to them in just a couple minutes. First, Slipknot with Cypress Hill is coming to Climate Pledge Arena on June 13th. Tickets went on sale today at Ticketmaster.com, but we have your chance to win a pair of tickets. Head to 710sports.com/win to learn how. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Now,
Slipknot, Stacey. I know you're a big Slipknot
fan. For their vacant defensive coordinator position, of those four, who is most able to turn this group around this offseason? We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to get to the next three teams next.